the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's Chris Prytower.
The origin of each of us stems from codes of genetic inheritance. That's a quote from neurophysiologist John Eccles. Some of us come from famous parents, some marry into famous families, and others still create their own fame. Well, our guest on today's program can claim all three. Joining me today on Lifetime Planning is author, speaker, and businesswoman Mitzi Perdue. She holds a BA degree with honors from Harvard University and an MPA from George Washington University. She became president of the oldest and largest farm women's organization, was a nationally syndicated columnist for more than two decades, and she had a popular television series. Her father, Ernest Henderson, co-founded the Sheraton Hotel chain, and her late husband, Frank Perdue, was the second generation in the poultry company that today operates in more than 50 countries. Mitzi Perdue, welcome to Lifetime Planning.
What an absolute joy to be back.
Mitzi, we've had the pleasure of getting to know you on Lifetime Planning over the last couple of years. I've shared anecdotes from your previous Financial Sense interviews probably more than any other of our guests. And it's important to note that our listeners can type Mitzi Perdue into the search engine on financialsense.com to listen to those previous interviews. Her last name is spelled P-E-R-D-U-E. Mitzi, you've shared so much wisdom on this program. I should probably mention that this is generational wisdom, not just what your famous father said, but what he actually did, and even your famous husband, not just what he said, but what he did. And these men made tough decisions that really have had generational impact. So I want to start off by asking, Mitzi, what are you doing now that you feel is worthy of your late father and even your husband's example?
Oh, what a beautiful question, and I'll do my very, very best to answer it. Both men deeply believed in philanthropy. My father once said, I was watching him writing checks and asking him what he was doing, and my father said that he was writing checks to charities that he believed in, and he said the greatest pleasure that his wealth ever gave him was in giving it away. And my late husband, Frank Perdue, also felt that if you want meaning in life, think of somebody else and what you can do for others. Find a cause that's bigger than yourself. So both men left me with a deep, deep feeling of the importance of philanthropy. And if you'll allow me to build on that, there's some research that shows that they were right. And the research that I'm going to quote, it comes from a hero of mine, Dennis Jaffe. He's a theoretician of family businesses, and he has studied more than 100 families, each of which have lasted 100 years. And what Dennis Jaffe says is, if you want your family to last a long time, if you want to copy the practices of the ones that really lasted, get into philanthropy, because they all do.
Well, Mitzi, I know your family has been involved in philanthropy for many years, and if there's one thing I've learned from getting to know you on this program in the past, it's that you are very intentional about what you do and why you do it. What kind of philanthropy are you involved in today that you would say is informed by your passion?
Oh, I'd love to share what my particular passion is. And maybe I can explain it by explaining how it began. On April 11th of this year, I heard a lecture on human trafficking. It was by Paul Hutchinson, and it was in the Cayman Islands where he was a speaker, and I was a speaker. Well, after hearing about human trafficking, I'm going to guess that every one of our listeners has heard the phrase human trafficking. But Paul Hutchinson got into some of the things, the amount of suffering involved, such as a girl 12 years old might be trafficked 12, 20 times a night, and that her life expectancy is less than 7 years, because she's going to die of suicide or an overdose, or, you know, in one way or another. That person is living in hell and going to have a short life. Well, I heard this and I thought, this is the most evil thing that I've ever heard. And then I heard that there are 40 million people who are in the modern equivalent of slavery. And I thought, you know, at my age, and with the resources I have, I want to spend the rest of my life trying to do something about that. And that's what I've been doing pretty much 18-hour days ever since.
We can get so overwhelmed by the headlines, but Mitzi, you believe something can really be done about human trafficking. Why do you believe that?
Well, let me tell you some of the latest research, and this comes out of Harvard, and the bank, the financial institution, UBS, is very interested in making this work also. Right now, a little bit of background, the UN recognizes 3,000 different anti-trafficking organizations. But the problem with them, you know, I love every one of them, and I want to raise money for every one of them. And, you know, I admire them to the outer limit, but there's kind of a new way of thinking, and it doesn't undo what's being done already. But what if you could use all the knowledge that we have of, for example, like at Harvard, at the business school, they know an awful lot about the economics of black markets. They know an awful lot about, I think I heard even $50 billion goes through banks throughout the world for this trafficking. What if they could use, you know, the most high-tech artificial intelligence algorithms, everything is brought to bear trying to eliminate trafficking in one country. And the country that right now they're, to the best of my knowledge, there are two countries that they're considering, and they will choose one, and it's Bangladesh and Kenya. But imagine instead of having like 3,000 efforts where it's kind of like whack-a-mole, you knock it down in one state and it comes up in another. What if instead we used every bit of knowledge that we have to attack the problem in one country, and then we have a lot of very serious academic research studying what's working and what doesn't work, and in the end, we'll have a prototype of how it was eliminated in one country, and then we can move on to use best practices throughout the world. The United Nations expects, aims to eliminate human trafficking by the year 2030. And projects like this make it possible. However, they cost a lot of money.
Well, that is a ray of hope. I mean, to even put a year on the possible elimination of the trafficking. And in your most recently published book, How Can I Make a Difference? 52 Tips for Combating Human Trafficking, there's a section titled, Why Don't Trafficked People Leave? Mitzi, why don't they?
Well, there are bunches of reasons. One of them is terror. I've talked with women who are survivors, and I can think of one woman. I'm going to use a fake name, but the woman's real. I've met her in New York, and let's call her Mindy Meadows. Mindy fell in love with her trafficker. He sort of almost like courted her. He was an older man. She was a lonely woman or girl, unhappy with her home life. And he convinced her that she was the love of his life, and she left home. And he was known as a Romeo pimp turned into a gorilla pimp. Once she was sleeping with men for pay, she thought to help pay the rent and that they were going to have a happy life forever after. When she started to pull away, he'd beat, golly, I'm trying to think of a polite word, it rhymes with hit, out of her. And so she's in terror. But then worse than that, she said, I know where you live. I know that you have a baby brother. I'm going to go to your, if you try to leave me, I'm not going to, not only going to beat you up, I'm going to find your baby brother and kill him.
Oh, wow.
And then she got, she'd watch her roommate was beaten just like to a bloody pulp for disobeying. And so now she's in terror and she's scared to leave. Then another case, I talked with the head of the NYPD, the New York Police Department Sex Crimes Division, and he told me just how strongly the pimp can have control over the girl or the boy. I'm going to use girl because it's most often girls, but there are boys. He told me of a case where a pimp was angry at the girl, and he had taken a glass beer bottle, whacked it against the sidewalk, and so that the top of it was broken off, and he now has a sharp instrument. He slashed the girl's face from her hairline to her jaw, just past her eye, and so the policeman met her in the hospital, and he wanted to take down her trafficker. She was so scared of her trafficker that she wouldn't talk with him, and the day that she was released from the hospital, she went back to prostitution, making money for her pimp. But can you imagine being so scared that even when there's a policeman there wanting to help you, you don't dare speak? I mean, their means of control are extraordinary. In some cases, there are cases where the girl is in love with the pimp, and she thinks, even though he has four other girls, she thinks, oh, but he really loves me, and as soon as he makes enough money and I'm going to help him, we're going to ride off into the sunset and have a happy life together. Then there are cases where girls are just so demoralized, and this happens a lot, where they, the pimp convinces them. I mean, it's like brainwashing, where they almost think, how about not almost, how they do think, this is what I deserve. And they're just completely broken.
Wow.
I mean, the absolute utter evilness of this is just hard for the mind to grasp.
Well, I do want to talk for a moment about your book, Mitzi, How Can I Make a Difference? 52 Tips for Combating Human Trafficking. In the book, you say, quote, that the income from human trafficking is so big that every year it generates enough money to buy every Starbucks franchise in the world, every National Basketball Association team in the U.S., and every Target store across the globe. It just seems hard to imagine the problem being so expansive.
It's so expansive because there's so much profit in it. If you're a trafficker, say you're in New York City, because I've got the statistics on this. If you're a trafficker, and they used to be known as pimps, so let's use the old word pimp. If you're a pimp, you have four girls in your, quote, stable, unquote, you may be making $1 million a year, tax-free, out of the absolute misery of the girls who are trafficked like 10 times a night, and you're not paying any taxes on it. And your chances of doing any kind of jail time are 1 in 100. Boy, that's a lucrative business to be in. And then let me add another statistic, which I find very sobering. If you think of the three largest sources of income for organized crime, they are drugs, illegal weapons, and trafficking. And a year or so ago, people used to say that trafficking came in third. There are people now, experts, who say that it's even the biggest source of income from organized crime. So combating this, it seems to me, not only helps the girls and occasionally boys who are victims of this, it also helps put a dent in organized crime to the extent that it can be stopped.
So Mitzi, where's the hope?
The hope is, I've taken salesmanship courses in my life, and what I'm doing right now is against all the salesmanship courses that I ever took, including my favorite, which is the Dale Carnegie course. I mean, I love them. They're great. But I've found that right now, I think for an anti-trafficking auction, which will take place in 2021, I've almost gotten $30 million worth of donations.
Oh, wow.
And I don't ask anybody for anything. I just tell them there's an opportunity to do the following. People who care about anti-trafficking, I bet they're in the same situation I was when I first heard about it, because I'm sitting in the audience listening to Paul Hutchinson talk about the problem, and I'm thinking, this is the most evil thing I've ever heard. I would like to really, on as big a scale as possible, support the efforts. But as I'm sitting there in the audience, I'm thinking, if I write a big check to them, that means that I'm cutting back on other charities that I'm already committed to, like ones that maybe I'm on the board of. And I'm sitting there in the audience thinking, which can I cut back on? And I think of, like the food bank or Red Cross or other organizations that I really love and support. And, I know that it wouldn't be good for them if somebody in the board of directors pulls back and stops supporting them. And so, I'm just stumped. What can I do? I want to help them. I don't have free money because it's already committed. And then an idea came to me. And this is an idea that changed my life and I think is changing some other lives. I'm sitting there in the audience and I'm thinking, I don't have the ability to write a big check because it's the money that I have available is spoken for. But what I do have is I inherited a fantastic, we think it's a 16th century chest that belonged to to a de' Medici cardinal. And I know that if I put that up for auction because it's historic and because its provenance is important, you know, it could bring in a lot of money. And I'm thinking, gee, I hate to part with this, but I know what it's likely to bring. If that could save 100 children, you know, and in my mind, I'm sort of weighing 100 children possessing this de' Medici desk. And, you know, it's a no-brainer. Of course I'd sell it. But then the idea came to me, I bet you there are other people in the same situation who might have valuable items that are, that maybe they're duplicates, or maybe the second wife hates the jewelry, or maybe they're in storage. And so I started thinking, might other people have be in the same situation? Well, I went to two auction houses in New York, and at this moment, I don't know which I'll be going with. It's Sotheby's and Christie's. Both have expressed huge interest in it, but the really good thing about both of them is they would be willing to conduct an auction for possibly 100 items that would be worth $1 million or more each. And what they would do is, you know, whichever one we go with, they would give up or forego their commission.
What percentage do they usually keep?
Their usual commission is something like 20%. And let me jump to a concrete example of how this works. There's a man who has a diamond and sapphire necklace that came from Marlene Dietrich. We believe it was bought from Tiffany's in the 1930s. It's appraised at $1 million. He would love to give this to the anti-trafficking organization of his choice. But the problem was, you know, before I spoke with him, he knows he can't just give it to the organization because what do they do with it? They don't have the expertise to sell it. He could sell it himself with a jewelry broker, but the jewelry broker is going to charge 40%. So he could only give $600,000. Well, he could take it to an auction house, and typically for something of that value, they'd charge 20%. So he could only give $800,000. But if he goes through the anti-trafficking auction in 2021, he can give the entire $1 million to the anti-trafficking organization of his choice.
Wow.
Well, he's not alone. Other people that I've talked with have, like in one case, there's a person who owns, actually it's two brothers, they own 12 plates that belong to Tsar Alexander II. In 1825, he was given these by his father, and there are 14 of these plates that we know of in the world. Two are in the, I think it's the Summer Palace in St. Petersburg, two of them, and the remaining 12 belong to these two brothers. And there's a Russian oligarch who believes in cultural repatriation who would like to buy them back. So we know there's a market for them.
Hmm.
You just can't believe the other gifts that have come in. But one, there's a man from Taiwan. He's the most spiritual, beautiful person you've ever come across. He inherited a 69.7 carat ruby. It's in perfect shape. It's about the size of a golf ball. It belonged to a Qing dynasty emperor. And he told me, I met him in Taiwan for this gift. He told me that his religion tells him that your life is measured not by what you can get, but by what you can give. And he wanted to give this to anti-trafficking efforts.
Wow.
So it's just amazing, you know, what's the kind of the force for good that's unleashed by the idea of converting tangible property into cash. And the donor gets to say where the money goes. And if the donor doesn't already have an anti-trafficking organization that they treasure, I'm going to recommend the one where we put it all together, you know, everything that we know, and try to eradicate it in one country as a template for getting rid of this atrocity for the whole world.
Well, you definitely are making a case for hope, for there really being a solution. And I'm excited to hear that for folks that do want to really make an impact, to really make a difference, that instead of commission eating in, like you said, to about 40% of what they might normally donate, you've really found a way around that.
actually, it kind of takes my breath away because I didn't expect it to grow like this. But you just, I mean, the donations that have come in, there was one woman, I think all my donors are the most beautiful people in the world, but I was giving a talk and it was for the family office experiences in California. You know, I had an hour to talk, so I told some stories. And at the end of it, the most beautiful woman came up to me and she had earrings that were like, they were precious stones. And I'm going to guess that the earrings might have been 3.5 inches long, just laden with every precious stone you can think of. And she told me that the earrings she was wearing, they were a gift from her mother. Her mother told her when she was starting her career in Hollywood, and by the way, she doesn't want me to use her name, so I'm not going to, but her mother told her when she was starting her career and had just moved to Hollywood, "I believe in you. I know that one day you're going to walk on the red carpet and you're going to wear these." Well, her career was a success. She wasn't a movie star herself. She was part of the ecosystem that produces great movies. But she was associated with dozens of famous movies like The Black Swan or The Hurt Locker. And she got to wear the earrings. But she told me while she was listening to my talk that she texted her mother and said, "I would like to do something about, you know, the most horrible thing in the world, sex trafficking of children. How would you feel if I donated my earrings for this cause?" And her mother texted back instantly, "Yes, yes, yes."
Wow.
Well, the woman came to me in tears saying that this was actually more expensive than her house or her car. But, and, you know, that's a pretty amazing gift. Well, I was afraid, you know, I asked if she'd have breakfast with me the next morning because I wanted to make sure that she really meant this. I mean, I didn't want her to be carried away by stories of misery and help. And so I had breakfast with her the next day, kind of to explore, "Do you really, really mean this?" And she said she'd slept better last night than any other night other than one involved with romance.
Wow.
Because she said she'd wake up now and then and just feel good about knowing that these beautiful earrings that were so precious to her are going to save people from the ultimate in all misery.
Well, I want to go public right now and say, Mitzi, that I will help transport those items to the auction site.
Yeah, just think of carrying a 69-carat ruby. It's in Taiwan right now. And I don't know if this is funny or not, but here's what happened. The man simply put this ruby, which might, you know, some people have thought it's worth $30 million. He simply put it in my hand and said, "Take it, walk out the door."
Wow.
But I didn't want to do that because can you imagine what it would be like to go through customs in the United States and declare a 69-carat ruby? I asked him, I didn't know how I'd handle it with customs. I was scared out of my mind about how I could get it to a bank vault in the United States from Taiwan. And so I asked him to keep it, and we'll figure out how to get to the United States. Or even better, my dream is to have an auction in maybe China or in Asia in any case, because I want this to be global. My dream, and it's partway there, is to have country chairs. We already have a country chair for Hong Kong. And there's several others, like in China, Taiwan, possibly Japan, that, you know, I'm exploring it with now. And I'd love to have state chairs for throughout the United States. Oh, and something that I left out, but I don't want to leave out. I've told you about the really expensive auction. The purpose of it is partly to raise money, but partly to raise awareness, because there are two very major public relations companies that are volunteering to help make this just a worldwide sensation, because the gifts that are coming in, including there's a possibility of a $20 million yacht that's being discussed right now.
Oh, wow.
Because I want anything that can be auctioned. You know, it can be that, you know, one person is discussing a very expensive or valuable patent, but whatever the item is, the idea is that every week there will be press releases throughout the world announcing the gifts. and telling the stories behind them, and then in the process telling why the issue is important. And in theory, this auction could be sooner than a year from now, or a year and a few months from now, but I really want the time to sort of build up a head of steam of awareness. But then building on the, you know, the super fancy auction, also, I just yesterday was talking with a man who's friendly with the founder of Alibaba. So what if there was an internet auction from Alibaba and then eBay? And if anybody in our listeners knows somebody at eBay, I'd sure love to talk with them. Because how about the global $1 million per item auction takes place one day, and then building on the awareness of that, we have an auction for everybody in which, you know, supposing you have some item that you care about that's worth $1,000 and you'd like to contribute, say, to eradicating human trafficking in Kenya or Bangladesh. What I want from both the two internet auctions, and it's being discussed and explored, but we haven't really gotten anywhere yet, is what if those auction houses would devote a day where people can say, what we sell today goes to anti-trafficking.
That's amazing.
And then there's something else that's going on. I don't want to name the company yet because it's so much in the exploration stage, but there's a very, very large international company that sells very high-end clothes. Like supposing you have a Dior bag or an Hermes bag, and you can sell it on this company's website. You get a huge price for the high-end item that you're selling. Well, there's some discussions, but I'm not ready to say it will happen or not. But the company that we're having the discussions with, we're exploring the possibility of what if Hollywood stars, you know, the A-level stars, and this is imaginary because Demi Moore doesn't know that I'm even thinking of her for this, but supposing Demi Moore, who cares about anti-trafficking, and trust me, I haven't talked with her, so if she hears about this idea, it would be a big surprise, but supposing Demi Moore has one of her most classic outfits that she wore in one of her famous movies, what if she put that up for one day at the secondhand store that deals with the highest end items, and what if it could sell for a few thousand dollars? And then, you know, this is imaginary or hypothetical, but supposing she has a couple of million followers on social media, she could be telling them about the item that she's putting up for sale, and I bet there would be a huge competition to get it. And this would work for any movie star, or yeah, you know, whether it's Hollywood or Bollywood or wherever, where the fans might really like to buy an item that the person that they're fond of wore. And yeah, I think that could make a few million dollars also.
I imagine it would. And, you know, something comes to mind here, Mitzi, as you're talking about this. It's such an honor to, first of all, have you bringing such a weighty issue to our program, but with a solution that can truly make a difference. And I, you know, one of the first things that you mentioned, that you have mentioned as part of your family culture, is learning from childhood that the child has to know they're part of something bigger than themselves. And it reminds me of something that Dr. Cornel West wrote in one of his books. He said that we've created rootless, dangling people with little link to supportive networks, whether it's friends, family, school, church, mosque, synagogue, something that sustains some purpose in life. And I imagine that some of these victims that you're talking about, you know, had a childhood where maybe they're, you know, was very little connecting them to something bigger than themselves. But I want to thank you for sharing with us and sharing with our listeners, not just an important issue, but how even our listeners can be a part of something bigger than themselves.
Well, I'm looking for volunteers. I'd love people to sign up for my blog, and it's at winthisfight.org. The more people who read my blog, the more clout I have, which is great, and the more awareness. But I'm also looking for volunteers. So anybody who would like to volunteer, and I don't care what your skill is, maybe it's secretarial, maybe it's organizational, whatever it is, we will find a use for you. There's one person right now, her specialty is in the business world, it's customer appreciation. And she wants to make sure that every person who's a volunteer here gets to feel absolutely wonderful about it. And I'm working with her on how to do that. So my goal is, if you volunteer, I want this to be the ride of your life. I want you to feel that you're part of something bigger, that what you do is absolutely meaningful, because it's going to save people from misery and lead them into freedom and eventually joy. And you can help make that happen.
Well, and the word that stands out that you just said is meaningful. And so if one of our listeners wants to do something that meaningful and get involved, you mentioned the website winthisfight.org. Is that the website where they would contact you?
Yes, winthisfight.org. And I'll answer every email I get.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Mitzi, you mentioned that both your father and your husband had amazing abilities, that they inspired loyalty, but also that while they used their business skills, it was actually their soft skills, the kind that inspired loyalty and commitment, that made them both successful as businessmen and as family men. And you say that sharing how they did it is one of your greatest honors. But I have to say, Mitzi, spending time with you on this program to learn from your legacy and the legacy of your family, that's one of my greatest honors as a host on this program.
Well, since I've been a fan for at least 10 years, I bet it's hard to imagine what it feels like for a fan suddenly to be on the show. Wow.
Well, the honor truly has been mine. We've been talking to Mitzi Perdue, author, speaker, and businesswoman. She's written several books, among them, How to Make Your Family Business Last, Tough Man, Tender Chicken, Business and Life Lessons from Frank Perdue, and the book that we've been talking about that was recently published, How Can I Make a Difference? 52 Tips for Combating Human Trafficking, available on Amazon.com. And once again, to learn more about her upcoming celebrity auction or to get involved yourself, go to winthisfight.org. Mitzi Perdue, it's been a pleasure having you on Lifetime Planning.
It's been sheer joy for me.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.